This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We have a very interesting program in store for you today. You know, we're departing a little bit from our usual format because, you know, this program is about diet, nutrition, and intelligent medicine, the best of high tech, the best of natural therapies. Today, we're going to take a little bit of a departure. We're going to talk about anger. And there's some good reasons for that. Because anger takes a toll. It's known that the physiology of anger is very bad for us. It ranks up there with smoking and poor diet, lack of exercise as a major cardiovascular risk factor. And in fact, the type A personality, it's not just someone who's fastidious and works really hard. A might stand for anger, according to the latest research, in terms of being a major cardiovascular risk. These times are very angry and polarized. Social media and politics monetize anger. They actually attempt to stoke our emotions in service of our consumer society or to get people to push the button for one or another candidate. How many family discussions will result in arguments about politics, about perceived slights. So this is a very, very timely podcast. With me today is Christian Conti. Christian is a licensed professional counselor, a certified domestic violence counselor. I didn't even know there's such an entity. He's also a level 5 anger management specialist. That's like having a black belt in anger management. That's the highest level you can attain. From the National Anger Management Association. I guess it's referred to as NAMA. Okay. And his, yeah. His innovative yield theory, which we'll get into, has resulted in training that has generated successful results for even violent criminals in family therapy, for professional athletes. And man, yeah, there's a lot of anger on the field. He's got a great website at drchristianconti.com. You can find out more. Christian, it's really a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine. By the way, your book, Walking Through Anger, A New Design for Confronting Conflict in an Emotionally Charged World, is a great read. I just completed it. So welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Well, you know, give us a little background on yourself, because I mean, I've not met you in person, but you, frankly, you look like a little bit of a physically intimidating guy. I mean, you got this, you know, you're like big, you're a big, strong guy. You look like basically a retired football player. You know, your arms are tattooed. I don't think I'd want to meet you in a dark alley, but you're actually a guy who specializes in diffusing precisely the situations that result in anger and violence.
Exactly. So I'm 6 feet, 250 pounds, bald guy with a beard and tie. I look like everybody else in a biker bar. Probably you're probably mm-hmm. going to a biker bar.
I can see you on a Harley. Yeah.
But I love what I do, and I lead with compassion. It's not about trying to intimidate anyone. I think, look, at the end of the day, we're all trying to seek peace. We do it in different ways. So my job is to try to help people try to find that center, because as you mentioned, you're so right. I mean, A, you turn on politics, you turn on the news, and people monetize anger. Like, if you're angry, you tune in. If you're not angry, you're probably not going to wake up and flip on that TV switch. But
it's
if you are, you
will. It's a tool for engagement. So, I mean, it's putting your id and your sort of your reptilian brain on the line to create engagement and buy-in.
Right, 100%. So yeah, I always tell people if a bear walks into the room, your amygdala, that fight or flight response, is going to fire a message to those adrenal glands and say, watch out, and start getting you ready to fight or run, whatever you need to do to protect yourself. But the same is true if someone says the right words, for instance, like, we need to talk. If you look at brain scan, it actually will do the same thing whether you're being chased by a threat or whether you're told something. Right. Your brain responds in the same way.
Or it's the boss wants to talk to you. Or, hey, it's your mom on the phone. You know, that just triggers the same. You know, you can actually watch an electrocardiogram or a blood pressure curve or measure cortisol, and you can see that, same kind of response.
Right. And so the challenge is this, and this is what I've dedicated the last 21 years of my life to. I say there's a difference between speaking just to speak, like, so you can be like, hey, I told them, or speaking so that you can actually be heard. And when people are defensive, when they're ready to fight you on whatever you're about to say, they're not real open to listening. And you can keep talking at them, but that's not really going to do anything except feed your ego. Or you can circumvent that and speak with them and actually get your message across. And that's what I try to teach people to do.
Well, I must admit, I was in a social situation over the weekend. And, I knew that we're of divergent politics, let's put it that way, in this group. I swore up and down that I wasn't going to engage in a political argument, because I like these people. They're, friends and family members. And I just went down that chute. I got snuckered into having a confrontation, which I felt bad about because I raised my voice at the end of it. I literally went, my hands were shaking. It took a while for me to calm myself because I just went right down that, chutes and ladders.
Right. Well, because I think that we're really, our egos really convince us that we're right. Our egos really convince us that our perspective is kind of the complete perspective. And that it's funny that if we have a tendency to believe that we're really deep and mysterious, but other people are shallow and predictable, especially if they disagree with us, like, say, on politics.
Yeah.
And that's called asymmetric insight. And the challenge with that is everyone has asymmetric insight. So we all actually are feeling like this. And as I'm sure Dr. Robert Fogel's research on certainty has demonstrated, 35 years, one of the leading neuroscientists in the world, that certainty is actually an emotion. I mean, when you feel certain about something, that's why you're shaking. Like, that's why you're like, this is an emotion. I'm so angry about this. It's not actually a cognition, but we convince ourselves that what we're thinking is intellectual or academic, but it's actually, we're just very tied to what we believe.
Right. And, and these days there are facts and there are alternative facts. And, you can literally, when it comes to diet, religion, or politics, you can silo yourself to reinforce your beliefs. And social media makes it easy for us to fire or unfriend people who don't agree with us.
Sure. And it's so you're right. We have confirmation bias. Like when we want to believe something, we will look for reasons to believe it. The challenge with that is this. And honestly, this is how I developed yield theory. Like, I think it's really easy to be skeptical of other people. It's easy to pick apart someone's argument if you disagree with them. The challenge, though, is even though all of us would say, hey, I still have more to learn in this life. As long as I'm alive, I still have more to learn. The reality is, as soon as someone challenges you, you get defensive. And so do we really believe that? Do we really believe we have more to learn? So instead of just being skeptical of others, I actually became skeptical of myself. I became skeptical of my own thoughts. And I said, what is it that I really do? I mean, I go into maximum security prisons. I talk with people. What do I do? I either sit in a chair in private practice and talk to someone, or I stand at a cell door and talk to somebody. But what are my actions? And I realized I do three things. I listen, I validate, and I explore options. And although that seems like, hey, that's so easy, obviously everybody listens, validates, and explores options. I was actually speaking at a mental health conference a few years years ago, and a woman came up to me at the break, and she was she was wildly condescending, and she said, "So that's your big theory, three things?" And I said, "Yeah, but if you think about it, all Bruce Lee ever did was move, block, and hit. He did pretty well for himself, so if we reduce it to that."
Well, there's actually an interesting analogy between what you do and martial arts. You know, which you know, traditional Oriental martial arts actually is based not on you know, force and aggression and attack, but more, you know, kind of utilizing the energy of your opponent to diffuse basically the encounter.
Yeah, so I studied the martial art Aikido, which is basically rooted in a push-pull philosophy. So if you push me, instead of pushing back, I pull, then you go flying, and the same is true. If you pull me, instead of resisting, I go with you. And the same can be done with energy. Look, when people are angry, you're not going to talk to their, you know, obviously, if someone's really astute in neurology, they could cringe if you reduce the brain to a couple aspects, but just for general public, like, the reality is that our emotions are centered in the or more toward the center of our brain, or higher level thinking is more toward the front. And if you really want to engage that front part of someone else's brain, then you've got to help them get out of the emotional part. Mm-hmm. And that's a reality. And then once they get out of the emotional part, now they're ready to explore and actually talk about stuff. But most of the dialogue in today's world is just, you know, anger to anger. Mm-hmm. It's just emotion to emotion.
Twitter is actually the amygdala in 140 characters, I think.
You know, just see, I mean, that's
great. And cleverly, you know, insults that are just really clever. Sometimes they're just, you know, just out and out profanity. But that's the nature of the dialogue these days. It's
that's
pretty bad.
Great. It is. And I think people hide behind anonymity. So if I can be anonymous, I get to say whatever I want. You can't hurt me. You can't say anything back to me. And in that becomes, we dehumanize. So honestly, like, life happens on a continuum. So if you think about this on a continuum, in the Nazi concentration camps, they used to strip people of their humanity. They would stamp them with a number. Mm-hmm. And in their minds, they could say, well, I'm just hurting this number. I'm not hurting a human being. I'm hurting this number. Mm-hmm. But that same process actually happens every time you call somebody a name. You call them a name, this person's a jerk, this person's this or that. You're actually doing the very same act of objectifying that person, mm-hmm. which then allows you to go more and more in attack mode versus really trying to understand that, look, just as one thing led to another in the story of your life, the same is true with everyone else.
Indeed. This actually, in reading your book, it sounds like a combination of psychology, Zen Buddhism, maybe with a dash of Christianity thrown in. Am I off base in suggesting that?
No, you know, I mean, I do practice Zen Buddhism. I grew up, well, I mean, I think anytime you talk about Buddha, I'm sure that Christianity stuff can be thrown in as well. You know what? Yeah, I think that is kind of what it is. Psychology with Buddhism is really the essence of what my approach is. And obviously, yeah, the Jesus and all that, his teachings were phenomenal and on that same kind of plane. So, yeah, I think all that's infused in there.
But yield theory does not connote surrender. It's not like, you know, turn the other cheek, right? Somebody strikes you. It's not as, it can't be boiled down to a simplistic
thing. No. Yeah, and I love that you brought that up, because that's important. So let me give you an example. So in state of California, if you commit a violent crime, you're sentenced to 52 weeks of anger management after you get out of prison or jail. So you might have already done your time, but then you have to spend another 52 weeks in anger management. And when we say accept or yield to someone, my rules for this group, I co-founded a center out west, and guys would come there, and what we found was people would graduate that group, get off of parole, and come back voluntarily. And it seemed unheard of, but here's where the yield aspect was. My rules were absolutely solid. So in other words, my group started at 5:00 and 7:00. If you came in at 5:01, you were late. You only had three lates in a 52-week period. That fourth late, and I'm calling your parole officer, and you're going back to prison or jail. Mm-hmm. And I'm alive to tell the stories about what I did there, even though many people, you know, not many, but several people had to go back to jail and be called on that, because I hold the consequences, but it's not me. I'm not tied to those consequences. So if you imagine me holding a water bottle, and in that water bottle, I tie all of my consequences. If someone disagrees with those consequences, if they break the rules, if I'm holding on to that water bottle, I take it personally. But if I could take that water bottle and set it down away from me and realize mm-hmm. I'm not the rules, mm-hmm. I'm simply establishing rules. Mm-hmm. If you break those rules, you're not disrespecting me. You're not hurting me. You hurt yourself. You chose to come late. People would say, well, I'm sorry I disrespected you. I say, well, you didn't disrespect me. Like, I have to call your PO. You know mm-hmm. what the consequences are. I'm not mad at you, but it is what it is. So it's not a matter of acquiescing or giving in to people. It's a matter of not resisting their energy. So if someone gives me anger, I'm not saying you need to calm down. Mm-hmm. You need to not be angry because they are angry.
Don't say that to a woman. Honestly, I feel like don't say that to a woman.
well, here's what I think. I think I've found that there's I have this tagline. I say there are two kinds of people in the world. I say there are people who have issues and dead people. So if you're alive, you got issues. And then on top of that, I say not only just two people, but there's two kinds of worlds we live in. One world is what I call the cartoon world. This is how it should be. So you're out at dinner with your friends. They should be adopting my belief system. They should see the logic in what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But then there's the real world, how the world actually is. And as long as we align our expectations with that cartoon world, we're let down when the world isn't what it is. But the world's not letting us down. It's our own expectations. Yeah, honestly, a large portion of my career is devoted toward helping people align their expectations with reality and be more prepared for it.
So a big issue these days is that people, especially women, suppress anger and avoid conflict. I mean, I think there's a traditional role stereotyping around that. But women, men are maybe more fluent about expressing anger. They, play contact sports. They, engage in fights, push each other around. Women suffer because they bottle up their anger. And your recommendation in the book is that you should, quote, walk through anger. What do you mean by that?
So it's unrealistic to expect that we don't experience these intense emotions, or it's unrealistic to expect that we shouldn't have these experiences. We do have them. What I say is it's going to be there. We know now in 2019 that the brain doesn't ignore things. The brain might shift its focus, but it's not going to ignore it. It's going to stuff it down. It's going to come back out somewhere else when we're least expecting it. So taking that information and realizing that, we say, if we know we're going to have to deal with it, why not deal with it now? And there's a way to be assertive without being aggressive. And there's a way of understanding where your anger is really coming from that can help you deal with it. So I say, instead of ignoring it or trying to pretend like it doesn't exist, i.e. the cartoon world, recognize the reality of what's in front of you, and then prepare yourself for that and deal with that. So that's what I mean. Look, I have a great analogy in the book. I say this: if you in gargoyles, let's say outside of the Christian churches, mm-hmm. they had gargoyles, and historically those gargoyles were the role of those gargoyles was, if what's on the inside of the church is something that you believe is your salvation, something powerful, spiritual for you, then to get there, you have to see something scary and go through it. And those analogies are actually similar in many different religious mm-hmm. traditions. In Buddhism, they say when you die, you're faced with either your worst fears or your most beautiful gods. And if you choose the beautiful gods, you get reborn as the lowest life form. If you choose your worst fears, you're able to walk through it and recognize it's just a projection of what's inside of you. And so honestly, walking through anger is about dealing with stuff head on, but not in aggression, but with knowledge, with compassion, with understanding.
And a theme that just keeps coming up again and again in your book is this notion of non-attachment, which really I think is a big concept in Zen Buddhism. Could explain how that's applicable to anger and personal conflict?
Yes, I think it's essential to practicing yield theory, whereas a lot of people, I've spent my life breaking down esoteric subjects and making them really simple for people. And when people see something and it's super simple, hindsight bias kicks in. They say, well, oh, I already know all this stuff. And it's funny, but the reality is that non-attachment is what makes you actually practicing yield theory. In other words, if you disagree with me, if right now you said, oh, that's a bunch of crap, instead of me saying, oh, you're disrespecting me, I say, I'm not attached. I'm saying you're attacking what you've read, either about me or of my stuff. Mm-hmm. And I say, that's not who I am. So it's learning to identify yourself. Look, it's easy to do it with material goods. Mm-hmm. So for instance, people might say, well, I have this beautiful watch or I have this beautiful car and that's my identity. Well, if you lose that watch, you lose that car, you're not less of a person. You don't really lose your who you are. But now we might understand that around material goods, but what about our thoughts? Like if we all believe we're still learning, then we're not our thoughts either. So in other words, we might have thoughts, we might be passionate about them. Mark Twain said, speak with conviction, but be open 100% that you could be wrong. It's non-attachment is understanding that we still have more to learn. It is leading with humility rather than leading with certainty, which now neuroscience kind of backs up that when we're leading with certainty anyway, we're not really being intellectual or cognitive, we're being emotional.
Well, you set the stage beautifully for our discussion in part two of how we might apply this. So, you know, we're going to get into the nitty-gritty. Of course, lots more detail in the book Walking Through Anger, A New Design for Confronting Conflict in an Emotionally Charged World. This, folks, is a very, very important aspect of your total health portfolio because you can be on the most scrupulous diet. You can exercise daily. You can get adequate sleep and you can get organic food and, you know, have, you know, pure air and water. But if you're seething in anger, it's going to have a detrimental effect on your health, no question. Our guest is Christian Conti. Christian is a licensed professional counselor, trained in psychology, and a level 5 anger management specialist from the National Anger Management Association. Wow, that's like being a black belt in in conciliation. Right? Yeah,
I love it. Yeah, it's great. You know, it's funny because I've been fortunate to be. You know, fortunate to get this, you know, level 5. The other 3 people that have it are like 30 years older than I am, so they always joke with me. Like, I feel grateful. I'm 46 and I've reached this level. I think I'm honored definitely to have it for sure.
That so, 46, it took you a lot of years to process this and develop this as a methodology, and also facing some pretty hairy situations. We'll talk about that in part two of today's Intelligent Medicine podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.